Welcome to the Like a Bigfoot podcast. I'm your host, Chris Ward. This week, I'm super excited to get to sit down, chat with world-renowned ice climber, Jeff Mercier. If you go back and listen to episode 373 of our podcast with Francesco, you will know that Francesco is planning on producing and directing a documentary about Jeff and about some of his exploits. And so Francesco was kind enough to get me an interview with the man himself. And this episode is really exciting for me. I don't think I've ever been able to sit down and chat with someone who does ice climbing. I don't really think I've sat down with a high level climber on the podcast yet, which is wild to me because this is episode 380. So I'm super excited to do this. We explore a whole bunch of different topics here along with ice climbing, but Jeff is also a part of the mountain rescue team. So we kind of get into what that experience is like too, how people stay safe in the mountains, and kind of, you know, just what he has learned over his years and years of doing this pretty dangerous sport. So we do talk about how to stay safe in the wilderness while still pushing your personal limits. So yeah, let's get right into it. This is the Like a Bigfoot podcast number 380 with the great Jeff Mercier. All right, ladies and gentlemen, today I am so honored to have Jeff Mercier on the podcast. Jeff is one of the world-renowned ice climbers, and I'm so excited, man. Like, I don't think I've ever had an episode about ice climbing before. I don't really know much about it beyond you climb on ice. So yeah, welcome to the show. Oh, shoot, man.
Yeah, sorry about the connection.
Oh, it's okay. It might be mine. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's because of me. I tried to find a not to.
Yeah. No worries. I can edit all this stuff out. Or I can start.
Sorry.
Oh, no
worries. Yeah, no, I'm good. I won't move anymore.
Okay.
I promise.
You're going to start climbing stuff soon, man. Yeah, man, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you, Chris.
Yeah, I'm very curious in a couple different aspects of your journey, but really just to start off, like, how did you get into this sport? You know, was it like a natural progression, or did the ice kind of always draw you in?
What I can say is I'm born not too far from the big mountain that we have in France. I'm not born in Chamonix, but it's just 20 minutes from these well-known cities.
Yeah.
And it's because of I have two uncles who were some really good alpinists. So I began to climb with them. I began to climb with them when I was 13 years old, rock climbing most of the time. And then a few years after, when I was 18 or 20, I began ice climbing. Yeah, because it's what I love. It's climbing on the vertical, vertical path that I can find. So sometimes it's on the rock, and when the season turn to ice, because as I say, I was living in Ottawa, which is really cold in summer, so it's too cold to go rock climbing. So it was the other thing that we can do was ice climbing. So that's
I
do like this. It was natural to do that.
Yeah. What did climbing as a teenager look like versus climbing now? You know.
Sorry.
What was climbing like as a teenager? Like, were you more risk? Like, were you taking more risks at the time, or are you doing that now because you're just more comfortable?
Yeah, what I haven't said is that I began to climb when I was 13. It was in July, And 2 months later, I was at the hospital because I did a big mistake when I was rappelling. I rappelled just on a single pittance.
Yeah.
And then after 2 meters, the pittance goes away from the crack. So I flew from 10 or 15 meters and hit the ground. So yeah, I've been really lucky because nothing was broken.
Yeah.
And so I understand just 2 months after beginning the climb that it was a dangerous sport. So I have always that in mind that I always have to take care of what I do when I go in the mountain or when I just go climbing, because you can turn easily from a very good day to something very, very bad.
Yeah.
And maybe it's one of the reasons why I became in the future later a mountain rescuer, which is now my full-time job.
Yeah. Yeah,
because the border between a really good day, as I said, and the accident, it's always really close when you are at the border and you try to push the level. So yes, my job is really close to my patient. So yeah, I'm really fortunate to do that.
Yeah, I want to get into that in a little bit, just hearing about what that's like as a mountain rescuer. Because I'm sure you just have endless stories from that experience. I guess you've been doing this for years and years and years now. If you started when you were 13, you've been climbing for a long, long time. What?
40 years.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm 53. 54 this year.
You're a very young looking 53, just throwing that out there.
Thank you. Liar.
I was curious, like, what keeps bringing you back? Like, what is it about climbing? Is it the act of climbing, like the physicality? Is it the being in nature? Is it the pushing your limits? Like, what draws you in to this sport?
Yeah, it's a small part of what you have said before. But the first thing, it's just to be outside, to be in the nature, to be in a wide place. It's for me really important to discover something new. That's why I try to do the more first action that I can do, because it's more. What I love is to discover something when I go in the mountain. It's not to follow a guidebook who said, yeah, you can climb that crack on 10 meters and then go traverse 2 meters. Yeah, what I really, really love is to do the thing by myself. So when you do a first ascent, you have to understand the mountain and you have to read the face to find the best route, the easy route, the best place to follow, the best line to follow to go on the top of the mountain. So yeah, for me the main thing is to discover something. But I really love to push my limit. Because if I don't push my limit, it's not a good day. If I don't fall when I go climbing, I don't do that for sure when I do some alpinism. But if I go climbing or if I go ice climbing, as I have done few weeks ago when I was on Iceland, I climbed a very massive arch. So the idea was to push the level as much as possible, which means till I fell. So yeah, it's discover something new and pushing the limit. It's what I really love when I go in the mountain, and that's why I try to train as much as possible all weeks. Every week, I try to train 2 or 3 days. I'm really lucky. I'm really fortunate because my wife is do a lot of things at home, and with my job, it's pretty easy to have free times for me.
Yeah.
So yes, but because I need that. If I know my physical level is not as high as I imagine it can be, I won't be enough confident to go in the mountain or going on the icefall to do my best.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally understand that. And I mean, it's for me, it's just like, it seems like a mental thing too. Like when physically I'm at my best, I feel like mentally and like emotionally I'm at my best.
Right.
Yeah. I want to hear a little bit. So just you mentioning discovery, like that sounds like such a human thing. Like it's a human pursuit to go out and discover something new, even if it's just something new for yourself. But a lot of people kind of end up not pursuing that for whatever reason. Can you just talk a little bit more about discovery, like what it feels like to discover a new route and why that's so important to you?
Yeah, so back in the past, I was living in Chamonix. I stayed in that city for 15 years. So when you're in Chamonix, every day you can see the mountain, you can see the big crest from the valley, from the city.
Yeah.
So with the different lights, the light of the morning, of the summer light, of the winter light, you can see some different feature in the face, like a corner or like crags. So for me, it's always something that I have. It could be nice to climb that crag or that corner looks really nice, but just 50 meters of a face of 1,000 meters, so it's not enough. But day by day or month after month, there's this corner here, but now I have find a ledge. And then month after month, I have the idea of that line will grow in my mind.
Yeah.
And when I have 3/4 of the route in mind, I can go. Because I do a lot of dry tooling, which means that I'm able to move on the rock even if it's really cold, because I move with the axes and with the crampon. So I don't need to climb with my hand. So even if it's -20, it's easy to walk with it, because we have gloves and all the winter stuff. So even if you don't find the connection between different feature, you know that the dry tooling will help you to connect the different line,
yeah,
the different place of the face, and it's really interesting, because you figure out that you will find something, but you're not sure, because you can find a big slab with any crag, which means that it's not possible.
Yeah,
but it's what I need. It's to not to be. If I was 100% sure that I will succeed on what I do, it's not really interesting. You need to not. I need not to be sure of what I will do. Will it work? So do I have to find a B plan? Or will it be? I have a lot of questions in mind, and it's really important to not to be too much sure of what you do. You must be really humble in front of the mountain. Because yeah, the weather can change very fast, or sometimes the avalanche risk could happen suddenly because the temperature will move. So yeah, I always take care of what I will do. That's why I have a lot of plan in mind every time I go in a mountain to do a first session. But when you succeed, you're really lucky, because it means that you have solved a lot of problem, and it's not climbing for climbing. It's that thing of but you have solved of the problem, but the nature gives you tons of problem, and then yeah, you can play with that.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, for me, it's really interesting. So you have the physical problem, you have the find the line, and then, as I have said, the crevasse or the avalanche risk or things like this, of the rock fall. You have to deal with all of that. And yeah, for me, that's why the alpinist is so, give me so many good things. It's because I learn a lot from the nature, because there's a lot of things. It's not a crack, it's a lot of things coming from the nature.
Yeah. When you, like, to me, not being a climber at all, like I've climbed like one thing my whole entire life, you know, but I love outdoor adventures, you know. I love going on hikes, I love going on runs and things like this. Sure. I'm just curious, like, when I hear about a route, it's this inconceivable thing in my brain, but you know these routes, like, from putting your hands or your ice axes on it. Do you get a, like, if you look at the mountains now in Chamonix, do you just see all the routes that you've climbed over the years? Like, do you have a mental map of that, you know?
Oh yeah, I have what I have is the mental map of the routes that I want to do in the future. Because what happened in the past, it's really cool, but the most interesting is what will happen in the future. And I said that I have lived 15 years in Germany. Now I'm in Corsica, this small island on the south of France. We live here with the family since 6 years, and in September we will come back in not in Chamonix, but not too far from Chamonix. And I have some line that I want to climb in the Grand Jorasse and in the Doru too. And since 2 months, I'm checking the face, having a look of very high definition photos to find new line, because I know that I will be really fortunate to play that game again in maybe in 6 months or in 9 months, next autumn, next winter. And I'm really excited to think about the future. I don't care about the route that I have done, but I'm really keen on what I motivate to do.
No, I love that. That's awesome, kind of like driving forward and things like this.
I need that, yeah.
You mentioned your family, and one thing, that I thought was really interesting is you have three kids, you have a wife,
And the
and
dog.
there yeah Oh, there's the dog right there.
Yeah, it's really nice border collie.
I just want to ask this, like, I'm also a dad. I have three kids too, and I want to hear your experience about like trying to get your kids outside, like maybe not interested in the exact same things that you're interested in. Like, I don't know if your kids are gonna do these giant climbs with you or anything like that, but how do you experience life as an elite athlete, but also a dad?
It's not easy. It's not easy because something really bad happens to me 7 years ago. I fall in a really big avalanche on the Mont Blanc du Tacul, and that avalanche killed one guy. And my boys, they see the avalanche on YouTube before I
Oh,
have the time
geez.
to ask them what happens. And so after that, every time I go back in the mountain, they had that film of the avalanche with me in the middle of the big pack. So it's the reason why we decide to move in Corsica, just to live in something more quiet. But anyway, I really love, because I see my young son Gabin. He is Gabin. You. He's 14 years old. He begin to climb just 6 months ago. I said, "Hey, Dad, I want to go climb." He said, "Oh, yeah, I don't want to push them to do the same thing as I do. I don't want them to become a little Jeff. They do. They take their own decision, and some play football. Gabin, he really love playing on his computer." And if they want to go climbing, I will go with them for sure. I have learned them how to ski when they were a very, very young kid. I go with them at the gym to go climbing sometimes. But I really love if they take their own decision. And so when they want to go climbing or go canyoning, I'm super happy to share that with them. But it's the same if I go with them when one of them go play football and just sit and have a look to doing the sport that they love. For me, it's what I have in mind since the first day that I had the kid is, you do what you want, and I will be happy with that.
I think for me, it's like I want them to find the passion. I don't know what they'll find the passion in, but and it's probably not, it's obviously not going to be this exact same as us, or as their parents, but I want them to find that passion. And when you see it in them, like you can probably see the same passion you find in climbing, you probably see in them doing their own activities. And I don't know, it's like a special thing, you know?
Yeah, you're happy because your kids are happy as parents and don't care about what they do. Just seeing a smile on their face, it makes my day, and it I'm really proud when it's like this.
Yeah. One, it's good. I think it's good for them to see and have a role model of someone who's out there chasing their passion. You know, some kids don't have that, you know, and I'm a middle school teacher, so I work with kids every day. So I see kind of the whole gauntlet of experience, and some kids don't necessarily see people who are really pursuing what makes their heart happy. And I just think that's an important thing for them to see.
Yeah, I agree with that. And especially when you become whole, because I'm, as I said, I'm 53, but I continue to train hard. And,
yes.
And I can show them that if you train, you can manage to do something, even if the most of the dad of their friend, when they, since they are 45 or 50, they don't do sport.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to continue. I have trained a lot to win the competition in Quebec.
Yeah.
It was one of the goals that I have for the winter season. And it's not easy, because when you do a comp, you all of the competitors, some of them could have been my son. They were the youngest was 18, and so the middle age was around 23, 25. But yeah, if you train, if you love what you do, it's so easy to wake up in the morning, even if you have to go running for hours or going at the gym to climb, which is sometimes not really fun. But if you train, you will manage to do what you have in mind. And yeah, as a parent, it's really, for me, it's important to make them understand that if you really want to do something, you will manage to do it. And yeah, when you can show it by yourself, it's not a story, it's what they see from me. So it's real.
Yeah, I totally agree. You mentioned that competition in Quebec. What is that like? What is a ice climbing competition like?
The competition in Quebec is a little bit apart from what the normal competition, if I could say. The competition, like the Ice Climbing World Cup of the competition that happens in Ure, it's not in Europe, because in Europe there's real rocks. So in the Ice Climbing World Cup, it's, you climb on the same wall that you can find at the gym.
Yeah.
Except that you climb with your axes and your crampon.
Yeah.
There's not ice every time, so you kick in the wood. So yes, you can. People call that ice climbing, but some of the time there's no ice at all, because they use ice climbing tools.
Yeah.
So most of the people who do that are not, for sure, not alpinists and not ice climber, even what they do is really close from the activity. But I have done that during five or 7 years, and you always learn something from the competition. Yeah. And for me, the competition is a really good school, because you must be ready for the D-Day, for the, when it's time to go to climb. You can say, oh, no, I have a headache. No, it's okay. You must go. You have 12 minutes to climb the routes. Do your best. And you train for that since 2 or 3 months. And when it's the time, it's the time. So, yeah, the competition for that, it's like in the real life, when you, for the job, you have a meeting, or yes, you have something really important when you meet your boss, you have to do that. So the competition is a good school for me, and I really love that. And I love the stress of the competition too. Even if I don't want to compete on the Ice Climbing World Cup, because for sure, but I'm really too old now. But I love that kind of competition, like the one in Quebec. And I don't know, I always had in mind maybe to come back in Europe. I win that comp 2 times, so we said never 2 without 3 in France. yes, the competition in Quebec, you have 2 times 90 minutes, and you have to climb, you try to climb the most route that you can do. So there's 10 climbers and there's 20 routes. And you lead during 90 minutes, and then you take 90 minutes rest, and then climb 90 minutes more. So yeah, you climb, it's crazy. I have climbed like 16 routes of between 30 to 40 meters. And so you Sure, you get tired, but even if when you're tired, you always have to be really focused on what to do, because the ice can break or the rock can break.
Yeah.
So it's like an alpinist, which it's not only a few minutes of climbing, it's a long, long 1 hour and a half. It's like a hard pitch on alpinist when you climb 60 meters. Sometimes it could take that time. It's the same thing for the mind. It's the same thing, but when you climb something on a big face, and for sure it's really fun, because there's a lot of people and everybody help the other, and you have a few times to discuss with the people when you go from a route to the other route. It's really friendly, and it's one of the reasons. It was the second time that I've come back in Quebec. But I'm always so happy when I can go with these guys and in Port. It's really, really nice.
Yeah, it seems interesting, because on an expedition, I'm guessing you have to be kind of patient with how you're climbing. And in a competition, though, there's like this weird balance where you're trying to go fast, but you don't want to mess up, because it'll ultimately slow you down.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's so strange balance there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, when you're in a camp, you're not scared about the fall, because you know that if you fall, you won't die. But if you fall, you will lose the competition. So it's always the balance. Do you have to kick one more time, or I will try this move and I will earn 15 seconds? So yeah, your brain is always working on what could I do? It's not only a physical problem, it's a question of strategy too. And for sure, if you're at the beginning on the first meters, you can take more risk, because if you fall, you just have a few meters to climb. But if it's at the end of the route, after 30 minutes of climb, you will have to see the problem differently, and there's other option, something safer. So it's what makes that competition so different, and for me so interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. To kind of pivot for a second, I want to hear. So I watched Cave of Dreams this morning. I watched some of the other short films produced about you. And of course, I've been, I got to interview Francesco and Josiah about their project, Ephemeral. And I'm just curious, like, as an wilderness athlete, an adventure athlete, who most of the time when you're climbing, there's not a whole hubbub of people around filming and things like this. Is it a weird experience when you're having an adventure or an expedition and there's all these other people around filming it and capturing it?
No, because as an athlete, you have to take part of it. You have to understand that.
Yeah,
because it's good for you, and it's good for the sponsor, for the brand.
Yeah,
but for sure, it's you won't do the same thing when you do a film than when you go climbing for yourself. That's why I really love to do the climb in the glacier, because it's easy and safe to bring a guy with a camera, and even if the guy is not expert in high mountain. I'm a mountain guide, so I know how to manage that kind of people to bring to the crevasse safely. I put the rope, I can do everything. And so the guy just have to film when I do all of the safety around the crevasse. So it works really well with the crevasse, but it does not mean that we can do the same thing in the Face Nord, the Grand Jorasse, or in the big mountain.
Yeah.
That's why you as an athlete, you must know the environment. You can't tell the people, hey, come with me, we'll do a film, it will be awesome. No, because there's too much danger in different places, like the avalanche, like the rockfall, as I've said before. But you have to find a very, very good place. And maybe I think it's one of the reasons why a lot of the film that I have done works. I can say not every time, but most of the time, because I know where I go, and I'm a mountain rescuer too. So if something wrong happen, I know how to deal with the risk. I know how to deal with the injury. I know what to do. So when you have all of that in mind, it makes the thing easy to organize all of the things around the action of the film.
Yeah, it's like a confidence because you're confident
For sure,
in your abilities to be safe out there.
Yeah, I try.
Yeah, yeah. I just also just on that same topic. I watched one where you were in Morocco climbing, which was awesome. Because I'm like, whoa, you can ice climb in Morocco. which is really cool. But what I noticed is it seems like being a teacher is really important to you. You like teaching other people how to do this and how to be safe and all these things.
Yeah, for sure. I've done that as a mountain rescuer for 6 years.
Yeah.
I do a lot of rescue, and then I become a teacher for the young guys. I do that for 6 years, and I really love to transmit, to ask of the people what they can do better, what they can improve to become better. And it's what happened with Faisal when we were in Morocco. That guy, he found the Grand Couloir and said, I would like to climb it, but for sure, I don't have the level to lead all of the pitch. So yeah, we share something, we share the climb, but we share more than just the climb. We share all of the, because we stay 7 days in a very small hut.
Yeah.
So yes, we know each other. Now we are really close friends. And sometimes when the weather was bad, we just go outside to learn how to put a screw or how to do a billet, just because I want him to become a better alpinist than he was before he met me. And we are still continue to talk with the visio when you have some questions. So I don't want the expression of being a mentor, but I love to, if I can learn something to someone, I will be happy with that. Yeah.
Yeah. And do you think like doing like a film is like a bigger way to do that? You know, I mean, the Cave of Dreams film on YouTube has like 4 million views.
Yeah.
Which is wild. But I'm like, what an awesome way to teach people about ice climbing. Like a lot of people who watch that probably had never been exposed to it before. And you get to be the person kind of educating, like, this is what this is, you know, this is why it's important and things like that.
Yeah, so if I have something to learn to the people, it's to understand that what I do is something dangerous.
Yeah.
So don't try to do the same if you don't have the experience, or take time to learn. Yeah, just sometimes it will take, I think it will need maybe 1, 2, or 3 winter to understand how it works. Just take your times, because if you go too fast, something wrong will happen. And with the nature, if something wrong happens, it could be really, really, really wrong. It's not on a, you're not on a football match. If you want to stop, it's easy, you can stop. But if you begin to climb a nice fall and you don't feel really good, or if the ice is not really good, it's your life. You play your life. So you have to just understand that it's possible to do that, but you will need experience to do the same. And the problem comes with the glacier, because it's really easy for the access, as I have said before. And I've seen now on the Mer de Glace in Chamonix that there's a lot of people in October, November. They want to go in the glacier, but they don't understand that some piece of rock can fall from the top of the glacier and eat them. So first you need to clean all around the crevasse, and then break the icicle. Just you try to figure out all of the risk that could happen when you climb. And just after, like 1 hour or 2 hours after, you begin to climb, because you have, I think that now it's clear, it's safe, and I can climb. But if I just go and rappel in the crevasse and climb without having a look of what all of the risk would can happen from the 360 degrees around me, for sure I will miss something and an accident will happen. So.
Yeah.
Even if it looks easy, it's not.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I think, I guess to wrap up here, I want to hear a little bit about, you know, being a mountain rescuer and an instructor for mountain rescue, because I think what's interesting is how many climbers aren't mountain rescuers. You know what I mean? Like, I think the crossover there makes you more aware of what can go wrong and does go wrong. You know, like you show up to work and you get to see what goes wrong every single day. And so then when you're going out for your passion, for your climbing, you're like, you have that in your head because you've experienced it firsthand, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
I think that's just like, I think that's really interesting dynamic. And I wonder if that has something to do with how successful you've been at doing this for 40 years.
Sometimes it's more a break than because, you know, when you do it, the approach, for example, you know, I have find someone who fall from that couloir and he died here.
Yeah.
And then 100 meters, yes, I remember that guy who do a rappel and then a rock fall happens. And I find his body not too far from here.
Wow.
So for us, for most of the mountain rescuer, they stop alpinism after sometime 10 or 15 years because you have too much things in your mind.
Yeah.
And so they decide to stop. But for me, it's the opposite. Because every time there's an accident will happen, I try to understand why it happens. And I have that in a place of my head. And I say, okay, when I do the rappel, don't remember that or don't do that. And with all of the bad experience coming from the other, I try to do my best. So, yeah, what I think is if you go in the mountain every day, for sure one day something wrong will happen. It's like this. But if you try to take care, if you try to learn from the other, and if you love what you do, which for me it's I have always that on my heart. It's I have tons of projects in the Alps and everywhere. I want to continue to climb as long as I will be able to do that. And but with that bad experience coming from the other, I think I am better than I was in the beginning. But I really know what could happen if I do something wrong. And I can say that the problem won't be for me. It will be for my family. And
yeah.
As much as you get old, you have that in mind. I don't want to leave my family alone. I have to stay with my kids. But I know that with the game I play, I can have an accident every time I go in the mountain. So you have to deal with that and to be you can cheat with them. It's like this. So I try to do my best. So when I think that the conditions are not good, say, okay, stop. It's not good. I will come back. I will come back and I will do it maybe in 1 week or in 6 months or in two years. There's no rush. If you can do, it's really cool. And if you can't do, it won't change a lot in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good, like, healthy way to think about that, you know?
Yeah.
To wrap up, last question, can you describe what it feels like when you're like in the flow of climbing? You know, like that's the joyful part, right? Like being in the movement, being in the discovery as you're going up. Like, can you even describe that, or does your brain just kind of like go to a different place? I guess what I'm trying to get at is like it has to be so joyful and so good for your heart and your soul, and I'm just trying to like put words to it, because it's that way with all of us when we're doing the thing we love, you know, and I'm just trying to like figure out how to put words to that.
Yeah, it's It's always a balance. I always take care because with ice climbing, it's not like rock climbing. Or as much as you push the level, the holes will become smaller and smaller. So at the end, your finger won't be able to be on the hole. It's different with the ice because when you push the level, it means that the ice become thinner and thinner, and it's hard to figure out when it will break or not. And sometimes when every day I have it, and this is what happens when I was in Quebec before the competition. The first day I said, oh, okay, I do that, and it was hard. And the day after, okay, I have done that yesterday, so I can climb on thinner ice, and it works. And then the third day it was the same, so the ice become thinner and thinner. And at the moment you have to say stop. Okay, tomorrow I will do a break, or tomorrow I will do an easy ice fall. Because if I continue, for sure at one moment everything will collapse, and it's hard to understand just to stop just before it's too late. But yeah, I have that feeling in me, say, okay, today I have done something harder, which means thinner than I have done yesterday. And but take care, because okay, if you fall from here, you will probably have a fall of 10 meters. I try to imagine from how long will be my fall. So I accept that it's totally, I know there's no reason of that. But for me, if I try not to fall longer than 20 meters, 15 or 20 meters, I accept a fly of, well, yeah, of 15 or 20 meters. And if I think that my screw, my protection are not enough good to stop a fall, a fly or a fall from that high, that okay, it's too dangerous, I will stop. And it's one of the big difference between each alpinist. It's what I have understand across the year. It's we don't have the same limit. Some of my friends, for them it's 40 meters, they accept to fall from 20 meters above the screw and 20 meters lower the screw, which means 40 meters.
Yeah, wow.
But it's really different, and it helps to push the level, because if you accept to fall, so you can do something hard, but for sure, if something wrong happens, it will be really, really bad. But as most of the time, nobody falls when they do some ice climb, so it works well like this, or we are enough clever to, I hope, to stop before it will be too dangerous. But you never know, because when you climb, you don't know what will be the quality of the ice. Maybe it will be too late when you understand that it's too dangerous, and it will be too late to go down because the ice won't be enough good, or there's not enough ice to put a good screw. So yeah, you always have to be able to read what will happen on the meters above you to take the right decision. It's not just, I'm so happy, I do a good day, I climb because I love it. And with that, having a look of what you will discover in the above you. And it's really important to always be okay, to understand that even if where you are, it's really cool, and it's one of the best time of your life, the ice can change in the next 5 meters, and it could become a nightmare in few minutes.
Yeah, so you're always making calculations. You're always being aware of that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Jeff, I'm so honored to have you on the podcast. So thank you so much for joining, man.
I hope that what I have said will be understandable for the people who will listen to the podcast. Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Where can people kind of follow along with your journey?
Sorry?
Where can people follow along? Like on your Instagram? Is that the best spot to follow your journey?
Yeah.
Okay, sweet.
For sure.
Awesome. I'll post that in the show notes. And yeah, Jeff, I'm excited to kind of like see where this takes you, see all the amazing things that you do.
Merci, Chris.
Bye-bye.
All righty. That wraps up this week's episode of the Like a Bigfoot podcast. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Jeff, for coming on, sharing stories, sharing your knowledge. That's what I've really enjoyed about being able to talk to folks like Jeff, who are just obviously extremely knowledgeable about being in the mountains, being in the wilderness, what is that like? And it is, it's really fascinating to kind of pick their brains. It's exciting to hear their tales of adventure. But it also is just a great reminder of how to stay safe. You know, what you can you do to kind of keep yourself safe in the mountains. So I feel like this episode had it all for me. You know, Jeff got to talk about being a dad also, along with being an adventurer and what that's like. And a little bit of filmmaking spiced in, storytelling, you know, thrown in there, which just reminds me, the movie that they're making about Jeff, as of right now, is going to be called Ephemeral. Francesco has been kind of sending me messages every now and then, updating me on that process and how it's going. And they've scored some really big interviews, which is amazing and really cool. Josiah, who I interviewed on episode 377, is going to be kind of the director of photography on it, or the cinematographer, and he's absolutely incredible. So check out his stuff too. But yeah, that wraps up this week's episode. Come back next week. Next week's going to be a lot of fun. I'm talking with an absolute ultra running legend, Marshall Ulrich. If you've never heard of Marshall Ulrich and the things that he's done, it is wild. He has crossed Death Valley probably more times than any human being ever. He has actually circumnavigated all of Death Valley, so going all the way around it, which sounds absolutely wild. I'm just starting his book right now, Both Feet on the Ground. He's done the Seven Summits. He's ran across the United States. He did pretty much all of the eco challenges. He's an absolute legend of the sport. And I'm bringing on my friend Ray Zahab as like a co-host. Super fun conversation. Ray and Marshall are friends. And so I thought that would be a good idea to bring Ray on. So it's an awesome one. And also, I'm preparing tomorrow at this time. I will be lacing my shoes up and heading out the door and taking on a 50 miler. So the first ultra of the year for me. Which is going to be awesome. I'm super excited. So I'll probably throw something in that episode about what that experience was like. All right. Come on back next week. Thank you all for listening.